Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Toro. For more than a century, with cutting-edge turf equipment and irrigation solutions, Toro has had your front nine covered and your back nine too. In fact, Toro's always had your back, period. Toro is as committed to your long-term success as tour pros are committed to their shot. That's down to top-notch customer service from Toro and its dedicated local distributors, both of whom are passionate about delivering turf equipment and irrigation solutions that solve real-world problems. Follow at Toro Golf on Twitter and reach out to your local distributor today. Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today is the seventh episode of our superintendent series. We are joined by Rich Schilling. Rich is the head superintendent at Jeffersonville Golf Course in Jeffersonville, Pennsylvania. It is a municipal golf course. It's one of the busiest golf courses in the country, getting over 40,000 rounds a year. It's a Donald Ross design, and since Rich has been there, has seen massive improvements and is one of the best courses you can play in Philadelphia, that anybody can play in Philadelphia. So we talked to Rich about all kinds of stuff, his background, what he's doing in these odd times, and how Jeffersonville has continued to evolve since he's been there. So without further ado, here is Rich Schilling.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie. I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
What have you been doing at home to keep you busy?
Huh, funny story. I sold my house in September because me and my wife decided we're going to downsize. My daughter's 17, so she's going away to college in, you know, a year and a half, hopefully, with all this shutdown.
Might be with you for an extra semester.
I know, right?
It's crazy.
So we were having a house built. We settled on our old house in January. New house is being built, and they shut down construction. So I'm stuck in an apartment for God knows how long.
Oh God!
You know, we were only planning on being there for 4 months, but now it's looking like we're 6-7 months.
So even better. You're in tight quarters with a quarantine or standing shelter in place order, huh?
Yeah, a two-bedroom apartment, one bathroom, two kids, and a dog.
Oh, man.
Oh, it's fun. I'm actually sharing my son's bedroom because my daughter wants no parts of that.
Unbelievable. So, everybody's probably getting closer than they ever were, though.
Well, it's inevitable, right? It's a good thing, you know, to reset, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I've been cooking, like my wife and I have been cooking more than ever, you know, and I think like that's something when this ends, like we're still going to cook a lot more than we used to.
Yeah. We've been getting familiarized with the Instapot meals.
Instapot's amazing.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. Really good recipes you can find online. So we've been pretty successful so far with that. Yeah.
What about the golf course? What'd you have to do with the staff? You're shut down in Philadelphia, and then what's the situation with your staff and how you've been, you know, doing maintenance in this weird time?
Yeah, so the township's been really great because it's a municipal golf course. They have allowed me to keep all my staff on. So even some of the college kids who now college is basically just Zoom classes, they come in 3 days a week. I got them back early, and then my regular staff. So I have 10 guys on plus me, and we're able to get, you know, a lot of things done. If the weather would cooperate, you know, it's been pretty cold out here lately and rainy, but finished up some greens expansions, all my aerifications done, like I said, and it's been a superintendent's dream. No golf.
It's got to be so different for you. I mean, you're at, you know, Jeffersonville is one of the busiest courses in the country.
Yeah, we did 42,000 rounds last year, just over 42,000 rounds. And, you know, that's basically an eight month season. We're open 12 months, but the majority of those rounds come in that 8 month period. So it's really different. I kind of getting a feel for what the country club life's like.
Do you guys operate around the same hours? Or obviously, I imagine when it's season, when golfers are coming out with your heavy play, it's like a matter of, we got to get all this done as quick as possible in this order. Have you changed any way, like you guys mow or go about it, where you have like a different sequence now?
Yeah, we're starting later. We're starting at 7. We work 7 to 3 now. Typically, we start at 5. We try to stay ahead of play. Play in during the week starts at 6:30. So we send 3 fairway mowers out, a greens mower, 2 cup changers, 2 approach mowers, and a tee mower to stay ahead of play. But right now, we're just kind of going with the flow. You know, go for whatever hole you want to go to the mat. So
how often do you have to mow to keep the course? You know, I know if it goes unkept, it, you know, you can have some grasses invade the greens and different problems occur. What frequency are you guys mowing?
Right now, the grass isn't really growing too fast. Temperatures are in the low 50s, overnights are in the 30s. So we're mowing fairways once or twice a week. Greens are twice a week right now. Tees once a week. So it's not really a typical mowing week for us in season. In season, we're mowing 3 days a week, fairways, tees, approaches, and 7 days a week greens. But I don't think you want to go longer than a week without mowing greens. Otherwise, you're going to have a hard time getting them back.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
And fairways, you know, you're going to lose your edges and scalp them down. I mean, we've gone 11 days without mowing fairways because of, you know, precipitation. But
tell us about how you got into turf at Jeffersonville. You've been there for a long time.
This is my 20th season here at Jeffersonville. I got to Jeffersonville because, well, me and my wife had planned to move to Delaware. I was working at a course down there called the Rookery, and she got cold feet. She didn't want to leave her friends and family. So I looked for a job back up here in Norristown area. And Jeffersonville was advertising for an assistant superintendent. So I applied for that job, interviewed, had 3 interviews. It turned out that the superintendent that was here at the time, Joe Felis, he was getting ready to retire, so they were looking for his replacement. So I was lucky enough to get the job, and my wife's happy, and now she'd rather be down the shore probably, but
especially with the apartment.
She probably doesn't talk to any of those friends that she stayed up here for. So
so you've been there for 20 plus years. So what was it like when you got there? It was before the Pritchard renovation.
Right. It was the very beginning of the Pritchard renovation. The course was what I considered neglected for many years. Fairways were probably 98% clover.
That's like my backyard.
It was terrible. I mean, and it was no fault of the superintendent that was here. It's just the township didn't want to put money into the course. So there was no spraying going on. Everything was mowed gang mowers. They may have had 2 triplexes at the time, 1 for greens, 1 for tees. And actually, I think they used the tee mower and they would flip it up to a different height to cut around the greens. So my big goal in the beginning was to start building the fleet. We had no equipment. We were still mowing fairways with gang mowers, you know, through the renovation and after the renovation. I talked the township into buying us about two fairway mowers, and immediately saw a difference in turf quality after we sprayed all the weeds and everything out of this place.
What was it like? You came in and you immediately got thrust into a pretty big project, and you know, much different than a lot of ways people would say the ideal way to restore a golf course is that you've got people playing at the same time as you guys are doing work. Had you been part of any construction projects before you got to Jeffersonville? And if so, like, you know, how was it different with people playing while you guys were doing work?
I was part of the tail end of the growing at the Rookery down in Delaware. I was mainly on bunker work. That was completely different because we were closed during that construction. This one was very difficult. We didn't even have irrigation to the fairways or to the bunkers or wherever we were sodding. We had to water with spray rigs. So there would be truckloads of sod coming in, and we just have to fill up the sprayer, go water all the sod. It's 95 degrees out. I mean, it was just kind of a disaster, really.
And you got hundreds of golfers.
You know, but most guys do construction in the shoulder seasons, and we were doing it right in the heat of the summer. And there was a drought that year, too, so that didn't help.
That had to be, I mean, in a way, it threw you into the deep end and it put you in this sink or swim position, right?
Oh, yeah. I was in over my head for sure. I remember driving around with one of my sales reps, and he said, if you could pull this off, you'll get a job anywhere. But I never left here. So, we're still trying to pull it off.
What was the biggest changes that the Pritchard plan brought back? Was it mostly just recapturing stuff? Had there been a lot of work done to the course in the intermittent years between when Ross did it originally?
Well, the only work that was done before Pritchard got here was, you know, they filled in almost every bunker, and they planted a ton of evergreen trees.
The best trees.
In 94, the township got a grant for tree plantings for municipalities, and they basically put them right at the very corner of every fairway. And then 18 years later, we cut them all down.
Mm-hmm. What did the trees do from like a agronomic sense to the ability to, you know, you mentioned you had clover fairways, but did they add to the turf issues?
Absolutely. Not only are they casting shadows all year long, evergreen trees, but you know, they're robbing all the moisture out of the soil. They're creating wear patterns because all the golf carts are riding around the trees in certain areas because they were so tightly planted. There's many reasons why you should never plant those types of trees on the golf course.
I imagine that when you guys have turf issues, it's only magnified by, you know, the intense amount of play, you know, doing 40,000 rounds essentially in 10 months, you know, that
right.
It you almost have to be more cautious than a club, a high end club that's getting 10,000 rounds a year.
From a play standpoint?
From a turf health standpoint.
Oh, yeah. We can't dry the greens out like a lot of these other guys and chase hotspots all afternoon because we just can't get all the greens when there's 218 players on the golf course. I think that's what we averaged last year. It's just impossible to do a lot of things, you know. So we water a little bit more with overhead sprinklers, and we fertilize a little bit more so that the turf can recover from ball marks and traffic patterns. But, you know, the greens were built in 1931, so they don't really need to be that fast. The greens, mm-hmm. the natural undulations of the greens, as long as they're consistent, I think they're good rolling at an 8.5 or 9.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you'd get yourself in trouble, and it would probably slow down play. I mean, does pace of play, just thinking about it, does pace of play factor in how you guys set up at Jeffersonville?
Yeah, I used to not think about it. I used to not care and just say, you know, I want to, you know, for my own ego, I wanted the greens rolling 10, 10 and a half. But when guys are, you know, four or five putting on the 18th hole, you know, it starts to get old hearing the, you know, hearing the complaints and, you know, not listening to them. I should have listened to them and said, you know what, they're right. Maybe we need to slow the greens down. And the pace of play, you know, now is average four and a half hours on the weekends. When it was probably 5.5 hours before.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, that's, you see it even on the PGA Tour where, like, when the greens are really fast, like, the pace of play just, like, balloons so quick, you know, and these are, you're talking about the best players in the world, not your, you know, weekend warriors.
Right.
Us mortals.
And the other thing is we just don't have, we have 2 acres of greens. So we really don't have a lot of pin locations. So we have to reuse a lot of locations. Our 18th green literally has 2 pin locations that are fair. Mm-hmm. Everything else is just like close your eyes and pray.
So how hard is that? Because obviously you get 218 people like walking in the same places all the time. What do you do from a turf standpoint? Like, what do you try and do to keep that grass consistent with the rest of the grass you have all over the course? Is that a challenge?
The grass on the greens?
Yeah, like specifically the 18th where you only have two pins.
I maintain it exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. Some of the pins are just a little sketchy that get put out there. You know, I make sure that the fair pin placements are saved for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
That makes sense. So if you go to Jeffersonville on a weekday,
if you go on a Monday, you may be five putting that green.
just know that your scores, you know, they should change the slope and rating for early weekday play.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's not the only one. I mean, the 15th green, the 14th green. There's a lot of greens that are pretty tricky out here.
That 18th green's really cool, though.
Yeah, it's vicious. That one is. I hit it last year in 2 from the tips, and I bogeyed it.
You must have been playing an early weekday.
I think I was, yeah. It was probably a Tuesday.
You've been doing a ton of expansions, and you guys, I think it's interesting, you guys did this Pritchard project, and you did a significant chunk of it out the gate, and then you left a lot of it. And one of the things I appreciate most about what you and the township are doing is it seems like you're constantly trying to improve the product. You've got a very busy golf course. You got a course people love in the area, and for good reason. It's, you know, it's a well-designed golf course for a very affordable rate, and you keep improving it rather than kind of resting on your laurels. Talk about how you guys have kind of gone about the course improvement plan from a budgeting and work standpoint of, you know, hey, we're going to tackle these projects.
Well, to be honest with you, in 2011, we sprayed a herbicide. I don't know if you probably have heard about it. DuPont put out for broadleaf, for broadleaf weeds. And, you know, that year, we started to see a decline in all of our white pines and Norway spruces. And here, those specific species were susceptible to this herbicide. So we filed a claim with DuPont, settled, got a nice settlement check. They cut down all the pine trees at their cost. So that gave us a decent amount of money that we could throw back into the course. And that's what really started it. We took down about 180 trees that year, and the golf course just changed so dramatically. The first hole, especially, is just an epic hole without the pine trees now. Mm-hmm. After that, you know, we started doing some projects. I started rebuilding a few bunkers that were in need. Kind of triage the areas that were really bad. I redid the 13th green complex that was really run down. And then Ron saw something on Facebook and commented and actually messaged me and said, "Hey, I want to come out and help you out a little bit. Maybe we can expand some fairways. I can paint some lines out for you, some new fairway cut lines, and we can work from there." So he came out and we did some of that. And he's like, "You know what? I see you're doing a lot of things here, and I got a guy that can help you out." And so I said, "Okay, anybody that can help would be great." And he introduced me to Tyler Ray. Mm-hmm. So that was probably 2016. Tyler came out and did a bunker complex for me and just like opened my eyes to what these complexes should really look like. And ever since then, we've just been kind of hammering things out, pedal to the metal, you know?
Yeah. And how do you do that with obviously the amount of play? Is it really, you know, I think like a lot of places would just shut down a hole, but you're not really in the position you can do that. Is it literally like, okay, we're going to tackle one bunker at a time, or how does that work?
That's exactly what we do. We tackle one area at a time, you know, just from a budget standpoint too. We do a lot of the work in house. Obviously Tyler will come in and shape out a bunker complex, and then we'll sod it, drain it, add the sand. But we just have to dodge bullets, man. We just start the project and let the play through. The golfers don't mind, you know. They love to see improvements. I've noticed that, you know, since we started, they're really appreciative of us not letting the place go revert back to what it was.
Yeah, that makes sense. I imagine, like, golfers, have you noticed like anything with when you got the trees out? Did pace of play get faster?
Probably did. It's hard to say. We do so many rounds. So, yeah. I mean, I guess we did because we're doing even more rounds now. But, you know, the funny thing is the golfers complained about all the trees coming down because they thought we were making the place easier. They thought that the trees were going to affect their handicap. Yeah. But that was just, you know, nothing can be further from the truth because it really doesn't affect the slope and rating of the golf course at all.
Yeah. I think that's like a common thought. Everybody always, "Oh, you're taking the trees out," but it lets you have like healthier grass and healthier rough. So, you know, the rough all of a sudden is more of a penalty.
Exactly. I always ask them, I say, do you play out of the trees? You climb up that tree and hit your ball out of there, or do you want to play off the turf?
That's another good one is just to say, "Hey, when was the last time you broke par?"
Oh, exactly. There's very few that break par here, you know.
Yeah. So you've been doing a ton of green expansions, and obviously I think that's something that we see at all types of clubs, like everywhere kind of needs to get. How have you been going about doing the expansions?
So what we did was we tried, you know, one thing and kind of failed at it. We were just going to try to scalp down the collars and some of the rough areas and just slowly bring them down into green sites. But unfortunately the collar dams are so bad that those areas they just couldn't handle it. So what we did as a backup plan, we collected all the cores and created a nursery green with all those cores so that we had a good match of sod. Basically, what we do is we shell out the outside of the green and do an extra pass around the collar where the collar dam was, and then resod that area with the sod that we grew from the plugs.
So it's exactly the same turf that you have on the greens.
It's pretty darn close. Yeah, I mean, we do overseed with some bank grass, so there may be a little bit more bank grass in those areas because they hadn't had traffic on them for 18 months. But but yeah, it's pretty close. Definitely closer than buying sod from the sod farm.
And a lot cost effective, right?
Sure, absolutely. It is a little bit more labor intensive though because you're stripping sod twice.
Mm-hmm. So when do you, I'm just curious, how big's your sod farm? And like, you know, if you wanted to go, you know, all out on expansions, how much turf could you get down, and what kind of impact, like how many greens would that equal?
Well, we can probably expand the nursery to about 6,000 square feet. So theoretically, we could probably do 5 greens a year mm-hmm. with that sod. But there's a lot of waste that goes in that too. So it's hard to say.
And how long does it take to turn around? Like where you take the cores out, how long is the growing period?
It took a good year for us to grow it in. We have an old driving range that has been closed down for 18 years now. And so we use that tee as our nursery, and it's fully irrigated, and it's on sand too. It's a USGA spec tee. So it actually works out well for us.
Now for a quick word from our sponsor, Toro. Those big agricultural tractors you see working on golf courses, with their clutch and complicated lever pulling sequences and a turf maintenance application, they're like stepping onto the first tee not knowing which swing you have that day. Toro's new Outcross 9060 can do everything those clunky tractors can, but with tons less stress on the operator and on the turf. With automotive controls and programmable attachment parameters, even rookies on the crew can be trusted with aerating, top dressing, mowing grass, loading sand, and removing snow from around the clubhouse in the winter. The Toro Outcross 9060 is like having all your best golf shots saved, ready for use, each and every round. Follow @ToroGolf on Twitter and reach out to your local Toro distributor to schedule a demo. And then you've been doing some fairway expansions too, correct?
Yeah, we're almost complete. We have 3 more to do. We're just simplifying the lines, making, you know, basically how a gang mower would cut. We're taking out Ron calls and bubbles. We're taking all the bubbles out, all that was contours around where the trees were, where the car paths are, bringing the bunkers back into the fairway. They were kind of abandoned into the rough. Basically what we're doing is just scalping down the rough. The turnaround on that is, you know, a matter of a couple weeks.
So you just have to cut it down, and then do you have to seed it or anything on it?
I don't. Oh. I don't seed it at all. Yeah, I just scalp it down. You know, because our fairways are, you know, a mishmash of turf. They're bent grass, poania, you know, a little bit of rye grass in there, and the rough's very similar.
That's cool. It's a neat way to do it in over time. And how many years have you been at the fairway expansions to getting to where you're almost done?
This will be the 3rd year. So we'll complete the rest of them this year. The reason why we didn't finish them last year is because we had some drainage issues in the ones that we wanted to expand this year. Yeah. So we're trying to button all that up.
I imagine that you set forth all these plans, and then, you know, I have the same thing happen to me. It's like, oh, I'm going to write this morning, and then 10 things pop up, and I end up being like, oh, there goes the writing time. And I imagine with project work for you, especially with all the things going on, all the play, things just pop up and stuff. It just doesn't get done all the time.
Yeah, I'm trying to get better at that. I'm trying to, you know, focus on one project at a time. The guys, they kind of get annoyed. They're like, you just start too many projects. Let's just do one and get that one done. But you know you're not going to get them all done in the amount of time you think you are.
I've learned, like, I'm a really good starter. Like, if you want to get something started, I'm your guy. But finishing a big project, I might not be the best at it.
Yeah, that sometimes is my case. Yeah,
it's because I'm already thinking about the next project.
That's the problem. We're just too creative.
How often do you get out and play?
Well, we try to get out as a group,
like whole crew,
twice a week. Well, not the whole crew. The crew that does golf, we try to get out, you know, 2 times, 3 times a week. And if that's 9 holes or 18, it doesn't matter. Just how many we can get in after work.
That's cool. It's got to be fun. You get and everybody gets to see what they're doing. Do you think it helps your staff? You kind of like know what they're doing and just help them. You know, has anything ever come of you guys playing like an idea or anything?
Sure, I'm sure there have been plenty. Usually, there's Miller Lights involved though, so yeah.
could spurn more ideas.
But it definitely does give the guys a sense of pride when they play, you know, because they know what all the work they're doing, you know, they at least get to enjoy it.
So with you guys, obviously you had the DuPont settlement, so you have money set aside and you're doing well. Like, how does, when you want to do something, how does it work with the municipality? How does the structure, I've always been curious of this. How do you work through the local government?
Okay. Well, it depends on the size of the project, obviously. If it's a big project, it's got to go in front of the Board of Commissioners, and they have to approve, you know, the plans to move forward. And sometimes it's multiple meetings, and there's only one meeting a month, so these things can drag out. If it's a smaller project, I'd go to my township manager, who's fantastic, and he usually just says, go ahead and do it, you know, as long as it's under a certain amount of capital. So then, you know, they pretty much trust me, you know, my decision-making when it comes to golf course improvements. I don't know if that's a good thing for them.
I think it's a good thing. You're doing a good job there. You know, it's when you get done with, say, the greens and the fairways, do you have like a 10-year plan or a 20-year plan, or are you just kind of going year by year?
Yeah, it's pretty much year by year. I do want to start, you know, I want Tyler to come up with a master plan for us. I want to present that to the commissioners next. But we do have some other projects in the works before I can even present that. We have some stream bank restorations going on currently. That's going to take a couple more months. And then after that, the township manager and the commissioners and I've been talking about a short course on the abandoned driving range. So that's going to be the next big project.
That'll be cool. That'll be a lot of fun too, huh?
Oh, it's going to be awesome. You know, I brought that idea back to the commissioners, to the township manager, actually. I visited the cradle down at Pinehurst, and I honestly had the most fun playing golf that I had in a long time. It was just such a fantastic experience. You can just have a good time, listen to the music coming out of the rocks, and, you know, just one club it around the whole course.
I mean, what a great thing to have for a township, too. You know?
It's fantastic. Like, yeah.
Great way to get kids into it.
Yeah, kids, you know, anybody that is a little scared or nervous of, you know, hasn't been exposed to golf that much. I wouldn't want my first round of golf to be at Jeffersonville Golf Course, for one. I would quit. but this is an opportunity for young players, just anybody that's new to the game to come out, have a lot of fun with their friends, you know, and have a great time, great experience. It's not serious, you know. It doesn't cost, you know, you're going to be, it's not like you have to have all the equipment either. We're going to have clubs for you.
Have they come up with any, you know, early ideas for pricing, how it would work? Is it, you know, kids free or anything like that? Or, you know, obviously you'll have clubs out there. Are you still in the works?
Still in the works, but we definitely have discussed that. And, you know, there probably will be a family discount because we definitely want it to be a family experience. You know, I got into the golf business because it was the pursuit of free golf for me. You know, it's so expensive, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, when I was 12 years old, I started playing with my dad and a few friends, and we would go to the local 12-hole course, rolling turf up in Schwanksville. And it was very similar, you know, it was $8, play all day. You know, it was just such a great experience. It was a great, great way to grow up playing golf, and playing with my dad and my mom and all their friends. And that's what we want this to be like. You know, we don't want it to, you know, break the bank or anything. We want it to be, you know, maybe $40 for the family to play.
That's it. I mean, I think that's like one of the big things, like affordable golf. I grew up at a course, and I think for the entire year, my season pass was $195. You know, as a kid, I could play golf every day for $195. And
it's awesome.
You think about it from a parent's standpoint, like, which, you know, it's like, oh, for $200, we can have something that occupies our child for, you know, endless hours every day of the week, you know?
Yep. And you meet really cool people on the golf course, and you create a network of friends, you know?
So there's a proposed plan pinned to your guys, to Jeffersonville, Twitter account, which is pretty neat. It's, 9 holes on 7 acres. And, you know, the holes range from like basically 100 yards and in.
That's right. Yeah. I think the longest one was 108 yards. And the shortest one is, you know, under 50 yards. And all the it'll be bent grass tee to green. So you can practically putt it off the tee right onto the green.
Ideal for beginning or just fun, you know?
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine all the mini games that you can create.
Use a different club every hole, you know, all kinds of fun stuff you can do with those. It seems like Jeffersonville, like your township in general, is just very committed to golf. Is there a lot of golfers involved with this in the city, or is it just where, you know, you guys have run, you know, a very successful business and that's where the commitment comes from? Or, you know, what do you kind of point to where, you know, I feel like a lot of townships and communities view the golf course almost as a burden sometimes.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a lot of golfers in the township. Most of our membership is outside of the township. We do have like a small annual pass holders, not an annual pass, and most of those are outside the township. But I do think even the non-golfers are very proud of the golf course. It is the one thing the township has that they can, you know, really be proud of. Not just the one thing, but it is a big thing that they can be proud of. So I think that is the major, that's the main commitment. And you know, it's very successful.
I've got lists of courses that I'd love to see, you know, start to be, you know, municipal courses that would start to invest back in and start to do small things. And I think your course is a perfect example of continuing to improve, you know, year after year and biting off little by little. If you were advising some, you know, impassioned golfer who loves a municipal course that just isn't, you know, that maybe has fallen under decades of neglect, and how would you approach trying to, you know, start to get some positive change at the golf course?
I would probably hire an architect to help.
Say there's no budget. You got no connections.
Oh, there's no budget.
No budget. No budget. Yeah.
No connections.
I'm just a golfer. I'm a local golfer, and I want to see this golf course get better. What's the first few things that golfer should do?
Yeah, I would definitely see the superintendent. Maybe even come up with a plan. You can always go to a meeting, to a township meeting, and it's always open to public comment at a certain point. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's what happened here originally in 2001. I don't know if it was a commissioner or if it was a resident that pretty much brought it to the township's attention that this was a Ross golf course, and they didn't even understand what that was. And they did some digging and realized, hey, this is a big deal. You know, maybe just do some digging and see, you know, if there's any historical value to the golf course too. You know, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine, because then you can get in with you can always play the historical tag.
Right, exactly.
Which is, you know, it helps. I mean, you tie it to the history of the community. That's a good point. You know, everybody always goes straight to the golf aspect, but if you could find more historical anecdotes beyond just like the golf course.
Yeah, and non-golfers may embrace that even more than, you know, if you're just going, I just want to spend money on the golf course, you know, but if you say it has historic value, then those non-golfers may, you know, may hold that some value to it.
So when are you guys expected to expecting golf to come back?
Well, the governor just opened some construction on May 8th. So we're hoping it's middle of May. Mm-hmm. We really don't want this thing to bleed into June, but I guess we just got to go with the flow. We're at the mercy of the governor.
In terms of just like an impact it's had on Jeffersonville as a business, like what would you say you go into mid-May, what kind of loss in rounds would that be from last year's 42,000?
It's going to be close to 10,000 rounds lost.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's going to hurt.
I mean, it's going to hurt so many courses that, you know, we're on the edge, you know? That's going to be a sad thing.
That's the scary part. But you hate to see anybody lose their job or a golf course close up because, you know, it's just going to be a housing development probably, you know?
Yeah.
We don't really need more of those. Maybe we do. I don't know.
I don't know. Housing development might not be the best thing right after this.
No, it's true.
What are you? You're a big golfer. What are your other favorite courses in the area to play?
My favorite course that I've played is probably Plainfield, New Jersey.
Another Ross.
That's a fantastic golf course. The golf course is closest to me. My favorites would be Golf Mills, mm-hmm. another Ross. I played the Cricket Club before the renovations, and it was fantastic. I can't even imagine what it's like now.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Public golf courses. I love, I think Turtle Creek's a great golf course. I'm not going to promote any more public golf courses. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, be careful there. When you go see, do you ever pick up anything when you say, like, when you played Plainfield, was there anything that stood out that you're like, oh, you know, that's kind of like something we have here, being both Ross courses?
Definitely you can see some similarities in the bunkering that Ron did. And I did add some, I got inspired by some of their short grass areas around the greens. So I started to do that also. Similarities, definitely greens complexes.
What is the short
grass? Even ours are on like a smaller scale though.
Yeah. With the short grass around the greens, how did that change from your maintenance standpoint? Was it a lot of work added, or is it just easy because you're already mowing the fairways?
Yeah, it's not really that. It doesn't really add much more work for us. Maybe a little bit more with spraying, but it's not that big of a deal. We're able to get through that just as fast as we were before.
All right. Fun question before we get you out of here. What's your pet peeve? What would you wish that every golfer understood about, you know, maintenance, say in the morning?
You know, my biggest, pet peeve or whatever is when we just get done raking bunkers, the guy goes in, blasts a shot out of it and just walks right up the face. And doesn't even rake the bunker, plus walks up the face of the bunker complex. That drives me crazy.
I can see how that bugs you.
Yeah. I mean, we do have a limited crew and we have 92 sand traps. So it's not like it's, you know, we do it every day. At least, you know, rake the bunker and think about the guy behind you, you know?
So it was funny. I was playing last fall and I hit it in a bunker and some guy was playing another hole. He walked all the way into the bunker, picked my ball up and walked all the way out. Didn't rake it at all. And and I, you know, I see him across on the other hole and I'm like, hey, I think you picked up my ball. And he's like, oh, and I'm like, it's, you know, whatever it was. And I go, also, you know, you forgot to rake the bunker. That's the bigger problem.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And he looked at me like I was like had three heads. But it, that was the thing that actually bugged me more than the guy picking up my ball.
I know, man. There's no etiquette with some people.
The worst was he walked in. There's a bunker right next to or a rake right next to him.
Oh, yeah. I'm half tempted to pull in the bunker rakes. I mean, nobody uses them.
I mean, some would say that, you know, your bunkers would be better. They, you know, this is a famous C.B. McDonald quote that you'd rather have 1,000 elephants run around in a bunker than have it perfectly groomed.
That's true. Learn more.
It's amazing, though, like for the retail golfer, bunker maintenance is such a like important thing.
Yeah. That's probably our biggest complaint here, bunkers. And the funny thing is if you put sand in the bunker, they say there's too much sand. If you don't have enough sand in the bunker, there's not enough sand. There's no happy medium with anybody. I think it's just that they just don't know how to hit the ball out of the bunker. So they have to blame it on something.
Well, naturally, that's no golfers. Never, that's never their fault.
You know, funny story. This is a while back, probably 10 years ago. We didn't have a roller, and this member would always come up to me and say, "Hey, you need to roll these greens; they're a little bumpy." I said, "Well, we don't have a roller." He's like, "Oh, okay, I understand." So I demoed a roller off of a local distributor. And I just parked it next to the green. I was getting ready to go out and roll. This guy gets off the green and goes, "Man, the greens are great. I see you rolled them." Didn't even roll them.
That's unbelievable.
Oh, man.
That sums up golf in so many ways.
Yeah. I mean, I blame the superintendent, too, when I go out and play my course. It's my fault I shot 92.
Exactly. It's always somebody else's fault. That's the key to happiness in golf. If it's never your fault, you can't get mad.
Or I blame it on the guy that's with me that changed cups that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another one. Oh, what, did you have a bad night last night?
List of most common, it would be like, yeah, they cut the cup wrong. I lipped out so many putts because they cut the cups wrong. Bunker sand, you know, bumpy greens. Yep.
I was actually told last year the fairways are too tight. They're too tight. I can't hit off them. You got to raise them up.
It's insane.
I'm like, okay, whatever.
So people can find you on social media. You're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter. I'm not very active on Twitter, but more so on Instagram.
Oh, I got to follow you on Instagram.
Yeah, I do post some pictures on Instagram.
What's your handle?
It's Shilling2PA.
All right. Same as your Twitter.
Same.
One.
Yep. Yep.
Then they can find you at the course. You know, you're there all the time.
Yeah, I'm always here. You know, that's what my wife thinks.
Anybody looking for good golf in Philadelphia, Jeffersonville should be right at the top of the list.
Well, thank you for that.
Of course.
I enjoy it. I haven't gotten tired of it yet. I've been here 20 years. So.
It's cool. And it's, I love, you know, following you guys because it's so neat to see the work keep going, and you know, you see all the greens, the expansions. It's just neat to see you guys continue to invest in the product.
Yeah.
So.
And it makes it fun for us too. I mean, it would be pretty boring if all we did was cut grass every day.
Yeah.
You know, projects are like the spice of the, you know, spice for us.
Yeah, it's got to be great for your crew.
They love it. You know, they hate maintaining some of these bunkers that Tyler put together, but but they are awesome to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you get a drone, or are these Tyler's pictures?
I have a drone.
Oh.
Yeah, you inspired me for the drone pictures.
you got good with the light. I'm pretty impressed.
That's just a little spark.
That's perfect. You're understanding how once you understand the light, then that's, you know, you're going to take amazing pictures.
Yeah.
It's cool. But we'll talk soon. I'm excited. The next time I'm out in Philly, I'll come by and see you.
Well, next time you come out, make sure, you know, we don't have 3 inches of rain dumping on us. You were here for the worst day possible.
That the whole week. It was unbelievable. Terrible. Every single day it rained.
That's like the new norm here, though. It rains every other day.
It's strange.
We got no snow this year, just all rain.
Do you get a lot of play in the winter?
Do well. If the weather's decent. I mean, we get people out here when it's below 30. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be like hitting into an ice cube.
Oh. If there's no wind, you can play.
You got to play the ground game, though. The ball hits the green, it bounces 20 feet in the air.
Yeah, seriously. All right, Rich, I appreciate the time and look forward to seeing you soon.